Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, March the 8th. And we're going to use our imaginations this hour. And imagine, say, talking with an acquaintance at a business function. And in the middle of your riveting story, he glances at his watch. What does that tell you? All right, maybe that's an easy one, but do you watch gestures and facial expressions of your friends, family members, salespeople, co-workers, maybe even politicians? And not just listen to what they're saying, but do you watch what they're doing as they're talking? Do you believe a person's body language is also saying something to you? We'll talk with a guest who says it is and can help us learn how to read someone's body language. And we'll also hear what he has to say about the body language of political figures we see on TV every day. It's interesting stuff. We'll welcome your questions and your observations, too, and we will welcome them at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. Right now, I have 2 fingers on my chin, and I don't know why. I just did it. So I will ask our guest what that means. Do you ever notice if someone's rubbing his or her nose a lot? What does that mean? Maybe somebody puts their finger on their lips, or maybe even covers up their entire mouth with their hand. We'll talk about all of these gestures and what they really mean. Our guest is Gregory Hartley. He's a former U.S. Army interrogator, and he is the author of a new book, the co-author of a new book, called I Can Read You Like a Book, How to Spot the Messages and Emotions People Are Really Sending with Their Body Language. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, your first book was called How to Spot a Liar. There's more in this book than that.
Yeah, the first book was primarily focused on deception. Also some other things about, you know, taking position at the table, those kinds of things, and what that means. The second book is more of a holistic approach at reading what someone's sending. For instance, you're looking at the watch signal. It's a pretty easy one. But most people, when they're speaking, will overemphasize what is in their head. So if you pay attention to a conversation and you see punctuation from the body on a specific topic that doesn't appear to be intentional, it probably is really what's underlying the person's conversation, whether that's anger or aggression or whatever it is.
Right. The watch one is pretty. I mean, we all remember the first President Bush looking at his watch in that presidential debate. It was a pretty powerful signal, too.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes they're very intentional. You know, you're talking about a first President Bush who was a polished CIA head, yeah, you think that was probably an intentional blunder of sorts.
It says I have better things to do and that kind
exactly.
of.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you actually had a little test in your book that you could, at a party, talking with a friend, take a look at your watch.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, just what? Observe what your friend, how your friend reacts to that. But then nod like you're really interested in what your friend is telling you as he's speaking. But then look at your watch again.
Yeah, just to see if you cause any kind of confusion or angst in your friend there. The interesting piece is, as I argue with someone typically, I will nod my head. And what you find is most people will disclose their entire argument from beginning to end so long as you continue to nod because they think you agree. It gives you the upper hand in an argument. It's kind of a dirty trick, but it gives you the upper hand because you can then take their argument apart piece by piece instead of interchange.
Yeah, you know, reporters do that a lot. You see that in cutaways on where they're nodding and nodding. It's to encourage, keep going.
Exactly. And we know that when I've interrogated prisoners and they get to a point they don't want to talk, if I nod my head, with exceptions of cultural differences, because culture is a huge part of everything we do. And if, for instance, you're talking to an Albanian who speaks Geg, you know, the nod does not mean yes. So it's an interesting difference.
It means no?
It means no. Oddly enough. And among Arabs, actually, the quick nod back with the head means no. So some cultural nuances you have to take into account, but most of us will never run into that. So.
Yeah, we're on the radio, so we can't see each other's. we're talking over a telephone. But you, one of the things is just saying yes, when you're talking on the radio. Sometimes a caller or a guest doesn't hear me verbally nod.
Right.
You know, they'll say, are you still there? Or, you know.
You know, the odd part is you'll find yourself, though, and you see this more than anyone else, you still gesture even though you're on the radio because it's part of how we communicate as humans. It's a big part of our communication style. And we gesture regardless of whether someone can see us or not.
Well, in fact, I didn't even realize that as I was talking, I put my index finger and my middle finger on my chin.
You know, that didn't surprise me because you halted a bit as you were thinking about what to say, and that did not surprise me that we typically, we'll make contact with our lips. Think of children and how tactile children are around the mouth when they're thinking. We just polish that out as we grow up and become more mature.
Is that a thinking gesture?
Yeah, it is. For us to put our fingers closer to our chin or our mouth, those kinds of things. Humans, like all other animals, unfortunately, we don't most of the time want to think of ourselves as animals, but humans, like all other animals, are driven by food. It's one of the primary drives we have. So things, if you watch a child, they will mouth a lot when they're learning. You've seen children really labor at coloring or something when they're very small, and they'll lick their lips and they'll use their mouth a lot as part of anything they do. Animals all do that.
You know, I heard, though, if I actually had my hand, and I'm doing it now, you know, over my mouth where I was hiding my lips almost and talking through my hand, that was a sign of deception.
Can be. And what I'm a really big person on baselining because you have to look at the individual. Some people are just very self-conscious about their teeth or their smile, and they feel uncomfortable, so they'll have a tendency to shield their mouth if they have braces, if they have bad teeth, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. or just a crooked smile. So a lot of people are very self-conscious, and it's something they've evolved. You just have to look for what's normal. Now, if they do it all the time, that's a pretty good indicator, but if they suddenly get to a tense or hot topic and they cover their mouth, good indicator of deception.
We're talking with Gregory Hartley, a former U.S. Army interrogator, has earned honors and has been called on by the Defense Intelligence Agency and the Navy SEALs. He is the author, co-author of I Can Read You Like a Book, How to Spot the Messages and Emotions People Are Really Sending with Their Body Language. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number. We invite your observations of body language. Ever see somebody make a gesture and you want to know what that means? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, March the 8th. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on the Ideas Net. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins after 5. Last week, Ben spoke with a guest from the Freedom From Religion Foundation about its case before the U.S. Supreme Court on government-sponsored faith-based programs. Today after 5, Ben talks with an opponent of the lawsuit. That's At Issue with Ben Marins after 5 this afternoon. We're talking with the co-author of I Can Read You Like a Book, How to Spot the Messages and Emotions People Are Really Sending with Their Body Language. Do you buy this? Do you think that someone's body language says a lot about what he or she is really saying? You want to ask our guest about a particular gesture or expression? Ever wonder what it means? 1-800-642-1234. We have an open line for you. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Gregory Hartley is a former U.S. Army interrogator, and I'd like to talk a little bit about this system that you have for scanning and interpreting anyone's body language. First of all, the review. What do you suggest we do?
Well, first I'd tell you the reason we came up with this READ acronym is because mm-hmm. body language is such a hard topic to teach in a single book that we had to come up with something that works for a person to be able to do it sitting in their living room as opposed to my standing in front of them. Typically, I spend anywhere from 12 to 40 hours in front of intelligence collectors teaching this piece. So then we say review is nothing more than turning off that adult brain you have. We've already assumed that we know what everything means because we talk to people on a daily basis. We've dulled that sense to read body language that our dogs and cats have and that our children have. We dull that sometime around 14 when we start to understand what everything means, or think we do. Yeah. And as we get older, of course, we have a schema to overlay everything onto and understand what it means. We say turn that off. Turn back to the time when you ask, Mom, what does that mean? Dad, what does that mean? For everything you saw. Mm-hmm. And just look at everything from head to toe, dress, everything else about the person. and look for something that stands out. For instance, you said, we were talking a few minutes ago, and I said, if a person starts to overemphasize any specific thing, it's probably the driving force behind the conversation. Look for something that stands out.
Yeah,
that becomes the evaluation.
Give us an example of that. So what would be standing out in notice?
I'll take a celebrity example, Ann Coulter.
Okay.
You love to hate her, you love her, whatever you love. You know, everyone has their own thing. If you watch Ann Coulter, when she is in charge, she has a very rigid, strong kind of an appearance. The minute she gets into trouble, she starts to do what I call, I'm just a girl. She starts to suddenly play on the fact that she is a woman among all these men, and she'll lean backwards, curl her body, get soft, look like a high school girl, curl her hair behind her ears, and start to kind of flirt and tilt her head. That's a good indicator that she's feeling uncomfortable and she's backing away. She's defending herself with her best tool.
So she thinks that's going to somehow make the big, mean guys nicer to her?
It does, because she's grown up in a world where, think of how many Ann Coulters there are in the College Republicans team.
Not too many.
Right. So she's always had this edge of being, I'm a girl among a bunch of guys, and she knows it works with her people. We cite in the book an example where she's on with Hannity and Combs, and she calls Combs a liar, and he takes offense and goes after her, and she starts to ball up and curl up and play all of that, and it doesn't work on him.
Yeah, so the flipping the hair back or putting it behind the ear, that's all kind of flirty, submissive type of...
Yeah, and what it is when you expose your ears or your neck, those are very feminine pieces of your anatomy that show very quickly, and you can blush a bit, and it makes you look more vulnerable and soft, and it is a natural thing for men to be less aggressive at that point.
Yeah. So anyway, let's say we review someone and we see that they're putting their hair behind their ear and they're, I don't know, you said they're kind of crunched over in like a C shape. That's sort of a submissive shape.
Yeah. In her case, it's far from submissive because she's a shark, but she is appearing to be submissive and appearing to be weaker. And all it is they're trying to soften to make you see that. And what you're trying to do is to look for anything. In our piece, I'm not talking about just Ann Coulter. I just use that as an example. Anything that stands out that's different. If you watch O'Reilly in the evenings, you watch him browbeat literally people. You turn the sound off. You can watch his brows as he tells you what he's saying without saying a word. So we look for anything that stands out that's an indicator of the person's body language, anything that's different. And depending on where you're at culturally in the world, it's going to be different, too. You know, your part of the country is primarily Germanic, much like the Southeast has been. And Germanic people have a tendency not to punctuate with their hands high above their shoulders. We all have a tendency to keep our hands kind of low. So when a male gestures, in most of our cultures, he's going to keep his hands below his shoulders.
Yeah.
If he gets excited, they may rise up to the level of his shoulders. Now, compare that to somewhere like Sicily, where the hands are moving constantly and up above the shoulders. So we look for those deviations, anything that looks out of the norm, and look for what stands out.
Yeah, and then you have someone like me who, my dad was Italian and my mother was German, so you have
you get a mix, yeah. But you're part of the country, and some impact of the blend of the culture, even if we move an Italian person into a Germanic culture, it has its effect on their communication style.
All right, so that's the first one, review. Check out someone from head to toe and look for anything that might stand out. Then you evaluate. Is that part of the evaluation?
Yeah, that's part of the evaluation. Mm-hmm. We're looking from head to toe, just doing a scan. Now, we talk about everything from in the review. We talk about everything from clothing, choices of clothing, hairstyle, those kinds of things, or lack thereof. That says something as well. You know, you look at some people who are so focused on their work, they don't care about clothing, they don't care about hairstyle. But we're marketed so much during the day, we look at all of that from head to toe. We pick out the thing that stands out. What kind of a statement are they trying to make with all of that? Or what part of their body language is coming out? And then the evaluate piece is nothing more than saying, how does this tie in? And we pull that piece out, we draw it away from the rest of the body language, and then we analyze it, and that's the A piece. We start to analyze based on culture, gender, all of those things, because women and men communicate very differently. Regardless of what we want to think, you know, I hear people all the time say, well, men and women are just like, well, that's a very childlike approach to communication because your brains work so differently from ours.
I did read one example where, for instance, in fact, the man on the cover of your book is standing in kind of a cocky kind of, oh, man, maybe that's the wrong word. He has his hands on his hips with his fingers pointed toward his crotch.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the sort of a masculine, I'm a tough guy. That's a defiance.
Well, and it's interesting. The more masculine we try to become, or the more feminine we try to become, the more demonstrative we try to become about attitude, the more we become whichever sex role we identify with. So if you then look at men putting their hands on their hips, we typically will frame our genitals with our fingertips. So we're pointing our hands on our hips and pointing down. It's a driving, masculine, T-shaped body with showing off who we are. With women, you'll have more of a tendency, if you were to do that, to put your hands softly against your hips and not put them on your hips unless you're trying to make a demonstrative, masculine kind of a pose. It's more natural for women to move laterally than straight. Your bodies are designed for lateral movement. Our bodies are designed for straightforward movement. Our hips aren't designed to move the same way yours do. Everything about us is designed to set us up for different communication styles.
Yeah, and you mentioned that if the women put their hands on their hips, it's more that their fingers point toward their butt.
Yep, most of the time.
And that's supposed to be that we're proud of our butts, or what?
It's just a more feminine. If you put your hands there, you'll see a more feminine, more smooth. You're not square. You're not broad-shouldered and that. You're emphasizing that smoothness to your body, that curve. And it's more of, women are centered more in the abdomen and that kind of thing, and men are centered more in the shoulders as we move. If you watch a woman move normally, women's center of gravity is much lower, not meaning necessarily in the rear end, but in the abdomen and around everything there. And with men, it's more centered around the shoulders. If you watch a man walk, especially hypermasculine activity, men will have more of a tendency to swagger because our arms have a tendency to be more pendulous and dangle. Yours move entirely differently. So as you look at everything about the way we're designed, it alters our communication style.
Now, President Bush calls that walking.
Yep, that's right. Swaggering.
Let me get a caller in. Mark in La Crosse. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a little story to go along with Greg's comments about children's perceptions of body language. When our oldest was very young, we were driving in the car one day, and he was being a little mean to his sister. So I turned around and gave him a look, and he immediately stopped and burst into tears. My wife asked him what was wrong, and he said, "Dad was yelling at me with his eyes."
Oh.
And I thought that might be a good example of what Greg was talking about with how children perceive body language. They're very attuned to it.
Yeah, I think we do, and that's a good point, Mark. Good morning, Mark, by the way. I think it's a really good point that children have to be tuned out to body language, and we learn as we get older to tune most of that out, in part because we become more egocentric as we get older. I mean, you can argue that a 2-year-old is egocentric, but not in the way a 35-year-old is. And we start to not notice the body language that will give us negative reinforcement of our own behaviors.
Yeah, and Mark, were you yelling at him with your eyes?
Indeed I was.
Children are very perceptive.
Can I ask one further question?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Greg, how would you describe baselining in layman's terms for someone who, how could you use that in everyday life?
Well, baselining, first of all, is nothing more than I look for what is normal behavior for that person. So I'll ask a question I already know the answer to, and for instance, I'll talk in just a minute about eye movement. But I look for what's normal for the person, and then as I up the heat or as something starts to change, I look for deviation. And that deviation can tell me the person's either just super uncomfortable with the situation or they may be outright lying to me. What I can do is I walk into a meeting and I start, let's say we're in business and I'm sitting in a meeting and I'm trying to get down to a dollar figure with someone. I can look for deviation as a person as I ask the person to calculate something, say, hey, how much money do you have in the contract for this? I can look for deviation that tells me that they're outright lying. And they're trying to hide money from me. Or, for that matter, I can look for emotion. If I'm in a situation where something has failed, for instance, in a system, and a person has real emotion around that failure, I'll see their eyes.
Yeah, you know what? I'm sorry to do this, but we're going to have to continue this after the National Public Radio newscast. We'll pick up where we left off. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 6:36 on this Thursday, March the 8th. And we welcome your questions and thoughts for our guest, who is an expert on interrogating and also an expert on how to read people's body language. He is the co-author of the new book, brand new book, I Can Read You Like a Book, How to Spot the Messages and Emotions People Are Really Sending with Their Body Language. Greg Hartley is a former U.S. Army interrogator and also the co-author of a previous book called How to Spot a Liar. And again, we welcome your participation in this conversation, and we have a line open for you. Gregory, we were talking just before the news break about baselining, and you were giving an example of how maybe you're talking with someone in a, I don't know, a business situation,
right,
about a contract, and you look for deviations in that person's behavior or gestures. Talk more about that.
Yeah, a couple of quick notes. I want to take one step back. Mark talked about yelling at his child with his eyes and his child recognizing that. If you look at the primate kingdom, we are the only animals who have developed the eyes that we have. We have a lot more exposed sclera, meaning the white part of our eye, and that is for communication. We know that it is probably one of the most powerful pieces of communication we have. So one of the things I use is deviation from baseline. I use eye movement, and I'll get to that in just a minute about how you would do it. But what we do is we look for a normal behavior pattern for the person. I look at things like cadence of speech, and you can already tell mine's relatively fast. I look for how quickly someone comes with a word rather than stutters, pauses, and stammers, those kinds of things. I look for gesturing. I look for the four basics of body language, which are illustrators, meaning the punctuation my body does to my spoken language, manipulators, meaning how I control a conversation with my hands or some other style. You know, O'Reilly uses his eyebrows. How I use barriers to keep something between me and you, and to your point earlier about covering your mouth, that's barriering. Mm-hmm. And then the last is adapters, and that is, you've seen people pace when they talk or that kind of thing, what's normal for the person. So if they start to leak more body language because they're fidgeting, they're rubbing their neck, they're twirling their hair, all of those things, I look for a baseline. Now, I start that by a stress-free environment, asking questions. And I look for what's normal. And then as I get to a topic, I start to look for that stress. I can read body language for emotion relatively easily. So, for instance, let's say we're in a situation where we have software systems and something fails and I'm in a business environment. And someone's starting to get animated, or just before they get animated, there's going to be emotion that shows in their face. And I'm not talking about rage. But people's eyes will drift down into their own right as they start to become emotional. What we know is we can pick up that indicator immediately and diffuse that anger before it gets to a point that is uncontrollable. So that is an advantage. Now, when I interrogated, I used it in both directions. Sometimes I would heighten that sense of emotion so that I would get more, you know, more emotion out of the person. Sometimes I'd let it down. I often say all an interrogator is an anxiety broker. We manage that emotional roller coaster for our source.
Yeah, let me follow up a little bit on that. If my eyes drift down and to the right, that means I'm under stress and maybe getting very angry?
It indicates emotion, so it could be an indicator of anger, so we watch for that. Let me give you an example of eye movement. This is probably the easiest thing to do on the radio. Everyone listening to you can baseline themselves very quickly. I'm going to ask you a question, and pay attention to your own eyes, everyone listening, as you try to answer. Mm-hmm. Most of you, 90%, will find your eyes drift slightly up and to your left, meaning between the brow ridge and the cheekbone. The other 10%, they're going to go to the right, to your right, between the brow ridge and the cheekbone. I'll explain why in just a minute. What's the fifth word of the Star Spangled Banner?
I don't know.
Just try it. Try to remember the words and pay attention to your eyes.
Oh, say, can you see? And I looked down on my hand as I went
through
the words.
Okay, you're counting. Okay, well, what we typically see is the temporal lobes, which are right over the ears, are where we store sound. In 90% of the population, we store memory or memorized sound in the left brain. 10% do it in the right. Or we can't say that's where it's stored, but we can say our eyes follow brain activity.
Mm-hmm.
And as I remember something I've heard, most of us are going to look to our left, which is the memory center for auditory things.
Well, I did look to my left when I did that.
There you go. And so now that's because it's an auditory memory. When we're looking for a visual memory, because the visual cortex is in the back of the head, we'll typically look high. And everybody's seen this on some cheesy movie that says you look this way and it means you lied. There's no way to do that. What you can do is you can ascertain how the person thinks. So, for instance, I ask you a question and the answer to something that's not contrived like the Star Spangled Banner, something like directions to the nearest Wendy's, I get your baseline. Then I start to ask you a question about a conversation that occurred yesterday, and I start seeing deviation from that. Well, I know you're making those details up. That's how we catch most liars. Now, I say that's how we catch most liars. The more experienced of interrogators catch liars through finding that and exposing the details.
Yeah. But that you have to be really trained in order to see that deviation, don't you?
Actually, no. Mm-hmm. In 30 minutes of doing this, you'll have an understanding, and you carry around the pattern in your own head, so it makes it very easy once you've read and learned the basics. anytime you have a question, you just try to remember lyrics and pay attention to what your own eyes do, and you'll know the baseline for you, and then you do the same thing to the other person. So it's actually, that is the easiest thing I can teach most people.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I read in your book that I thought was easy to at least observe, maybe if you're in this, this workplace environment, you're talking to someone, and all of a sudden, they weren't doing it before, and all of a sudden, they start rubbing their nose.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that, I read that that's, that person's under some stress. And
yeah, the nose, if you go and you look at these bodies exhibits where they've plastinated these corpses, you'll see that the nose is nothing but a huge volume of blood vessels. So when stress hits you and your blood pressure rises, well, the first places that's going to be noticeable is in the nose because of the blood pressure rising in a very small area. If you have any tendency to itch, it's going to itch then. It's also a barrier because as they scratch your nose, you're covering their mouth.
Oh.
So when I said barriers mm-hmm. before, that's putting something between you and the other person. Men and women do it a little bit differently, but all of us do it. That's just one of the indicators. The adapter is also there because they're scratching the nose, and adapter is just a release of energy of some kind. Men and women adapt very differently. Men are very tactile. We have a tendency to rub our thighs with our palms, that kind of thing. And you've seen that in the batter on deck as they stand ready to bat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I often ask people, why are they doing that? And people say, to wipe the sweat off their palms. You have to remember they're wearing gloves and probably some kind of tar on those gloves to get a better grip on the bat, so it can't be that.
Well, that reminds me, too, of a part of your book where you say you might want to put somebody at ease by mirroring them. And
yeah.
if somebody has their hands on their thighs, you might, start rubbing your thighs and putting your hands there, too.
Yeah, and what you don't want to do is to ape that person's behavior so they get offended, but you casually look more like them. It's very easy to get someone to talk when they feel comfortable with you. And the more you look like them, the more they trust you. And, if you've ever seen the movie Beetlejuice, for instance, there's a place in there where he automatically transforms into the guy he's talking to, and that's playing on that very thing. People are more comfortable with people who are like them.
Let's bring in another caller, Rita, in Wauwatosa. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if, with a predator, is the predator conscious of the body movements or the ability to bring in their prey, in human prey I'm talking about, or is it an unconscious, is it unconscious on both the person who's the predator and their prey?
Yeah. You're talking about human predators on human?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. You know, it's interesting. There's a lot of discussion about that. I actually am in regular conversation with a psychologist who deals with psychopaths in prison. Most of those people are psychopaths, and they tell her that they can sense weakness in a person. Most of them are not conscious of why they can sense it. They just can sense it. So there's a subconscious capability to perceive that a person is weak or that a person does not truly understand the threat.
Yeah. So when my husband tells me when I'm walking from my dark parking garage to be confident and look straight ahead and look
absolutely
strong,
right.
That's what I should do.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. And this woman talks to the nastiest of killers in the country, and I talk to her on a regular basis, and she says, yeah, that they all tell her they can sense weakness. One thing I can tell you from having interrogated many, many prisoners is fear has a smell. There's no doubt. After we keep people in sustained captivity and they've gone through the process of being captured and moved all the way to the rear, we can usually tell who is under the most heightened strain or stress, and we try to pull them out and calm them down as quickly as possible so they don't start to brag their details and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, Rita, does that answer your question?
Yeah. Oh,
thank you very much for the call. We'll check the weather forecast and then welcome more calls for Gregory Hartley, former U.S. Army interrogator, co-author of the book, I Can Read You Like a Book. How to spot the messages and emotions people are really sending with their body language. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email with your question or comment or maybe your observation. Maybe there is a gesture or an expression that you're wondering about. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 13 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Thursday, March the 8th, coming up after 7, we will welcome in the former UN Special Envoy for HIV/AIDS in Africa. Stephen Lewis will be coming to Wisconsin to take part in the Distinguished Lecture Series on the UW-Madison campus on Monday night, and we'll talk to him after 7. We're talking about body language this hour and reading someone's body language. talking with the author of I Can Read You Like a Book, Gregory Hartley. And we welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. And we do have a number of callers who we are talking to. But before I bring them on, I want to talk a little bit about some of the politicians and other famous people that you talk about in your book. We talked a little bit about Ann Coulter. But talk some about what President Bush is telling you with his body language when you watch President Bush maybe make a fumble or a stumble on his speech.
Well, I often tell people that President Bush has realized that he is no articulate speaker, and he's made an art form out of it. I often call what he uses the move on, there's nothing to see here. He's brought that to an art form. He knows that he's no Ronald Reagan as far as delivering speeches. He's no Bill Clinton as far as delivering speeches. So, in effect, what he's done is realized, I'll take advantage of that, and I will use it to make people think I'm not as smart as I am. He's actually much brighter than he appears, I would guess. Mm-hmm. Now, his body language will tell you every time he's not certain about what he's just said. If you look, I call it the dumb country boy smile. He mm-hmm. has the look that as soon as he's uncertain that he's getting his point across, he'll have that scrunched brow right between his eyes, and he'll have kind of a goofy smile if you look at it. And that's is that okay? That kind of thing.
Right, yeah. I can see it in my mind's eye right now.
Every one of us has it. You know, I've had people call him Alfred Newman, and I say, don't underestimate him just because he's learned to raise that to a new level.
Yeah. Your book went to print at the time that Mark Foley, the congressman from Florida, was in trouble for his text messages. Talk about what you noticed when you looked back on his facial expressions in the past.
Well, even more than his facial expressions were pregnant words. I actually did a piece for ABC News, and I analyzed some of his past tapes, and there was a point where he was pitching this bill to punish, child predators on the Internet, oddly enough. And he said, these people are sick. These people don't need to be in contact with children. You can hear that pregnant. They don't need to be in jail because mm-hmm. he's thinking of the future and where he's at. And I said, that tells volumes that he couldn't think of what he wanted to say or couldn't say something publicly because he knew that was going on in his personal life at the time.
So if someone pauses in their speech, and I do this quite a bit, but I'm thinking of what to say next, not necessarily that I'm trying to lie about something.
Absolutely right. It mm-hmm. doesn't mean you're lying. What it mm-hmm. means is there's something going on in your head. And what we look for as interrogators is an inappropriate response. If the person is supposed to be answering quickly with a yes or no and they pause, that's an indicator they're thinking. And by the way, cognitive thought, internal conversation is down and to the left in eye movement. And if I ask you a question you should know the answer to and you go there to calculate, I'm on that. I'm mm-hmm. on top of you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And, I mean, politicians all do it. Think in terms of if you look for someone who's very fluid like a Bill Clinton who moves very casually and speaks very well, his brain is designed for moving and thinking. On the other hand, his wife is wooden and she has a very difficult time getting off book. I refer to her in this book as the Holy Warrior, primarily because if you get Hillary Clinton on the run, and you can watch it as everything starts to unfold, she will put you back on the issue. She's very savvy.
Yeah. Well, we have lots of callers who want to talk with you. Let me bring on Marcy in Cushing. Hi, Marcy.
Good morning.
Morning.
My question for your guest is, how can we avoid giving off the wrong signals? If we have, those baseline signals, then if we don't want something to be misinterpreted, how can we avoid that?
You know, I think most of us are hyper-conscious of trying to send the wrong signal, and anyone who deals with me would tell you I'm the most blatantly honest person they've ever dealt with. It's always better if you're going to have a miscommunication for it to be based on honesty and to go back and say, you just misunderstood me. But if you're trying too hard, you'll send the wrong message, and then you've got to uncover, recover, and it makes it very difficult to recover from that. Having spent my life in an interrogation room where half of what you're saying is not true to your source, just so that you can convince him to talk to you, I like to uncomplicate my life.
Marcy, anything else?
That's helpful.
Yes, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. Nan in Rushford, Minnesota. Hi, Nan.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to know, I knew a woman who stroked her hair a lot while I was talking with her. She would stroke over her hair, and then she would, if it was pinned up, she would take it down and kind of fiddle with it and then put it back up and then take it down. And she would do that several times every few minutes.
Well, the problem becomes, is that an idiosyncrasy? And I talk about idiosyncrasies in the book or tics. We have to look, first of all, for what's normal for her. Does she do that all the time? Oddly enough, with women, stroking the hair, touching the neck, tilting the head are good signs when you're talking to another woman of deception.
Oh.
If, when they're talking to a man, oddly enough, that is your seductive behavior for women. You have a natural tendency to tilt your head, touch your neck, twirl your hair. But
so,
when it's again to another woman, a lot of times it can be deception or discomfort.
To other women, it's deception or discomfort.
Yeah, now, like I said, look for nervous tics or normal behavior for that person, because people get really idiosyncratic behaviors that you can't contribute anything else or attribute anything else to except for it's just their normal behavior.
Oh, no, I think she was doing it so much, I had the feeling that it was some kind of discomfort, but I just wondered what you had to say about it. So it's flirting when it's with the man, and with the woman, it's probably discomfort.
Yeah, which gives you guys an edge when it comes to deception, because your brains are better wired for deception than a man.
Well, oh, no. Well, you know what?
But men have denial on their side.
Well, we're primitive is why, compared to you.
Yeah, and flirting with some men can be deceptive, too. So.
Absolutely. I mean, you've learned that. In the book, and a lot of times I get flack from people, but I wonder why we evolved to this point, whether you believe in, evolution in the traditional sense or whether you believe that humans and society evolved. I wonder why we evolved to this point. And I think, did it come from a time when that deception for women, if men were violent towards women, they had more of a tendency to be seductive looking so that men would not perceive it? I just wonder about those things all the time.
You know, when I first met my husband and I was flirting with him, I touched his forearm. I'm not a real touchy-feely person, and I did that. And then I heard later that that was a real blatant flirting gesture.
Oh, yeah, it's huge. It's bridging the gap. You think about it in business, if you touch someone on the arm that way who is male, how that would be perceived.
Yeah.
So it's bridging a gap, and especially depending on what part of the country you're in. If you're in the Northeast, it's pretty common for people to touch and hug and that kind of stuff. But again, that has a lot to do with culture and a heavy Italian influence and that kind of thing versus your part of the country or my part of the country.
And what I'm saying is that I thought it was kind of unconscious or subconscious.
A lot of what we do as far as flirtation, especially for men, is unconscious. If a man is in the room and in the presence of a man he perceives to be superior or alpha, a lot of times he'll become more hyper-masculine. So a man who's normally not very masculine, if you see him hardening up and shaping up to look more masculine, it usually is a sign he's threatened by someone in the room.
Thanks, Nan. Andy in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, Andy.
Yeah, hi. I got two questions for you. One is, as people usually are going down the road today, driving their automobile, we're doing a lot of different things, smoking a cigarette, having a cell phone in our ear or whatever. What type of signs do you regularly see from that?
I actually talk about that in the book, oddly enough. I honestly think that a car is an extension of a home. People's body language is more natural. A person's body language is going to be more natural in a car than anywhere else outside of the home because they feel safe. Oddly enough, it's an American trait. We feel like it's an extension of our private space, so we do things we would never do in public. Just when you stop at the traffic light, look around you.
Okay, one other question, and that's it. We have people in society today that are dysfunctional, like they have a learning disability or they have a handicap, but some of them have very strong, personalities. What do you do to try to read, like, their body language for some of those people?
Well, I look at the norm for the person. I mean, if you were to meet me, for instance, I have probably a pretty strong personality after years of doing what I've done. So I'll have a very natural body language for me. I have to look at the baseline for the person. You can't read someone and project that body language onto someone else. You have to look for what's norm for the person. That's the reason I go review, evaluate, analyze, and then finally decide. And decide is based on how I'm going to use that body language.
Andy, thanks for the call. Mike in Milwaukee, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have a half a dozen books on body language around the house somewhere. And I notice you're using, like, what they call neuro-linguistic programming to determine where the eye movement goes and whether it's kinesthetic or audio or visual.
Yep.
Is your book different in any sense than these other ones? Now, actors use this stuff in order to convey character roles on television. We all use it every day, really, in order to manipulate people to get them to do what we want. Is your baseline idea the difference in your book between all the rest of them?
Yeah, you know, I will tell you there's a dramatic difference in that I did not learn by sitting in a classroom and learn, you know, from neurolinguistic programming. I learned pieces of that. I also took things that are simple observation. So I talk in terms of things that have to do with what's normal masculine behavior. I talk about posturing. So more than a single book that would tell you, okay, NLP, you could spend years learning NLP alone, what I try to do is to take not only the baselining piece, which is my driving force because I'm not an absolutist, but also to take into account some human norms, social norms, as opposed to just body language. If you look, there's a holistic view, for instance. I try to categorize for the first time, how can I look at someone across the room and get a holistic view based on energy, direction, and focus, those kinds of things. So it's just a new way to try to look at what I've done traditionally in an interrogation environment where you may have 10,000 prisoners and you have to pick out the guy you need to talk to.
Well, I wish we had more time to talk, but we're at the end of the hour. Thanks a lot for being with us. It was an interesting hour.
Thanks for having me.
Gregory Hartley, former U.S. Army interrogator, co-author of the book, I Can Read You Like a Book, How to Spot the Messages and Emotions People Are Really Sending with Their Body Language. It says here that this is going to be published by Career Press on March 23rd, so it might not even be on the bookshelves yet, but will be soon. Thanks to Karen Prager for producing the hour and to Leo Duran for on-air production. And thank you for listening and for calling in. If you would like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store 1-800-747-7444. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.